Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist. Yes, they did. They absolutely got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty works for you. And this is Tom Nivolus, your host. And I'm so delighted that you're joining me this week, because we're really starting something extremely interesting. I'm actually doing a dual recording. So we're doing the normal voice recording, and what we use is that good software Audacity as our studio software. And here we are, we're in basically our makeshift studios inside of the Center for Samuel Adams Center for Political Science, also is the National Center for the Development of Constitutional Strategies, and yes, it is. This is where Samuel Adams, yep, he sits here and he does a lot of stuff as he's returning to you. So we're taking and doing something different, because what we're figuring out and finding out is that in reality, we need to have both the audio going on, yes, the radio. So that's where Liberty Works Radio Network, and then what goes up on our archives on SamuelAdamsReturns.net. And you can check out the archives there. But we're figuring out that, you know, to get a little bit more exposure, it'd probably be good if we took and put things up on YouTube. And to take and just put up the audio portion on YouTube, you're finding that, you know, that's kind of good and it's really nice. It gets out there. But amazingly, people want to see what somebody looks like. And here you get it. This is what you get with old Tom Nivolus on. You know what? I'm not wearing my Samuel Adams tricorn and all of that. But we're going to take and we're going to bring through all of the different opportunities and the same content from the Anti-Federalist perspective. So it's really, really critical that we get this message out. And you know what? We had behind me for a while there our poster that we're using for Samuel Adams Center for Political Science, SACPS.org, that we've been promoting on the radio program. That, who would have thunk that when you're taking and you're looking into the screen on a Microsoft Surface using the video camera, that perspective is interesting. So there is truly, the doors behind me are correct. Okay, and the position of the things on my right hand and on my left hand are correct. But when you put up a poster or the, you know, what we have, it's bass-ackwards. It's just amazing to see that. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of people out there that can read backwards. But anyway, you know, we're not on topic just yet. But it's just kind of fun and exciting to kind of figure out that we're able to do the audio component of things, and we're experimenting with the video. So we're going to try some stuff on this Microsoft Surface and see how that works and where it's positioned and all of that. And if that doesn't make sense, I do have an HD camera that we may figure out how to put up in this tented environment that we have for sound. Which is also, you know, sitting at my desk of all places, yes. So we're going to try and have some fun with this, as well as try and figure out how to make the technology work and, you know, what happens with the camera, how you keep the lights right. Maybe we need to add some light. I don't know yet. But that's pretty interesting. So for those of you who have never experienced any of my radio programs or have looked at the Samuel Adams different videos that are up there on the YouTube channel, if Samuel Adams Returns is the YouTube channel as well, we're going to promote all of that both on Twitter and on Facebook. We have a number of different Facebook pages and so on. But the interesting thing is that sometimes people were asking, and I have to tell you, a number of years, over the years, the media has said, you know, this Tom Nivolus, he's a self-styled constitutionalist. Interesting. Self-styled constitutionalist, what does that mean? Well, you know, I expressed that in a program a couple of weeks back where a self-styled constitutionalist is no different than what General Gates was calling the majority of the citizens in the colonies of the day, is that they knew the law. They knew the English Constitution better than those that were sitting in the legislature. Okay. So, Tom, how is it that you get all of this? Well, as I mentioned to other folks and other times when I speak and all of that, is that I probably got a few thousand digital books that are our founders' books. I have all the writings of Samuel Adams in digital format. I have all, and these are, you know, his writings, his original writings, okay? They're in, you know, four different volumes, as well as the volumes that his nephew wrote about him and some of the others, everything written prior to 1850 that brought that together. So I have a lot of that, and then, you know, I go into the Patrick Henrys, I go into all of the anti-federalists. Today, I'm going to tell you about an anti-federalist that I learned something extra about. And I really didn't know where this guy got his name from and his background. And some of the things that you're going to be seeing me looking up and down. So if you see my eyes go up, that's because I'm looking at the computer screen to take and, you know, watch my timing, to take and look at the resources that I have up on the big screen, because you know, eventually I will put on the glasses and get a little studio or studious for you. And, you know, so we're going to keep going back and forth. But a couple of references. So some people say, okay, Tom, where'd you get this whole thing on, you know, the founder's background on the Constitution and all of that? Well, as I mentioned to you before, it's a simple little resource. Oh, little resource. Well, let's see. It's about yay thick, averaging. This one here averages about 700 pages. Okay, and keep it up as it goes backwards to you. This is really amazing. I don't understand why it's backwards when something's written. I'm not smart enough on the video stuff, but I'm going to show it to you anyway. It is called The Founder's Constitution. I talked about it. You can, you know, go online. It's online at the University of Chicago. I will put in, again, the reference for this. Five volumes, ladies and gentlemen, of this. And, yeah, it has really big print, too. So, you know, the intensity of this is that these are the words, the letters, the backgrounds of the Founding Fathers and the likes of John Locke and some of the others that were contributors, primary contributors. I study this stuff. Oh, you can see my pen is marked in there. Yeah, oh, there's a little underlining, you know, those types of things. I know I'm being silly, but when someone starts saying, hey, you're nothing but a self-styled constitutionalist, ladies and gentlemen, I think that I probably have studied the Constitution and the founding of America more than, what, 90% of the politicians? And that's at state, local, and federal government. Now, the one that I haven't studied sufficiently yet is because I've been moved to Ohio, is the Ohio State Constitution. So, you know, I'm a little behind on getting into that one. I lived in Washington State. I knew the Washington State Constitution like the back of my hand. So, is that something that a citizen should do? I think so. I mean, that's what our founders called us for, too. Is not to take and just trust somebody else. And we're going to talk about that today, especially as we look into more of the anti-federalists. Now, the anti-federalists, this is a simple one here. This one you can pick up cheap. I think I picked it up, what's it say, for $8. This is an abridged version. Remember, I tell you that the University of Chicago also has some of the greatest volumes of all the anti-federalist papers. Volumes. Compared to the Federalist Papers, okay? So, anti-Federalists, and in here it also has the Constitutional Convention debates and some other stuff. And this little one, I mean, but the prints are really small, and you need like, you know, 1x50s or something like that maybe for reading. But, you know, I'm hoping that the young folks out there will really look at it from this perspective. So, we're going to get into the tail end of this week, as we're coming to within the, you know, 4 minutes of this segment. The whole idea is that what happened, the antithetics, okay, so what you have is you have this constitution thing come out of the convention, and it goes to the states. Well, first off, it went to Congress that said, okay, we'll let it go out. And remember, this was the Congress under the Articles of Confederation. All right, we'll take this document, and we'll go ahead and we'll shove it out there to the states. And the states debates, you know, you can go through different ones on the Massachusetts. And it's really interesting to read everything that was going on in the states as well, if you really want to get an understanding of how the Constitution should function and exactly what the founders were intending for, what they were intending for that came out of the amendments, the Bill of Rights, all of that. Okay, so what we now have and what we are looking at is a gentleman, and we're going to talk about is that New York. New York was really interesting because two of their delegates pulled out of the convention because they were figuring that what's coming out of this convention was what? A consolidated government. Huh? You mean we have a consolidated government? It wasn't supposed to be like that? That's what we pretty much have today. The states are kind of, you know, sidelined if you look at what's going on and suing. You know, anyway, let's take that for what it is, and we're going to get into this fellow. So the debates were happening, and that's what was going on. And during the debates in New York, we see that, Virginia and that kind of gave in, and they went ahead and boom, you had over your nine that was required for the Constitution to go into effect. Well, New York didn't stop. They wanted to get their point in, they wanted to make a point, they wanted to make sure that we would drive to what would need to happen to protect the liberties of we the people, of those that would now be drawn into and become a part of this national government, and to try and manage and watch how the functionality of the national government should operate. So I talked about it a couple of weeks ago, is this difference between the Constitution as a framework, okay, as a framework for governance. But what's more important is constitutionalism. And you know what? They talk about it and they write about it in, yes, what I just showed you. So constitutionalism is that putting into action, that effect, that meaning, that that means of how a framework is going to take and work within a society. Very interesting. So this was totally different. And the debates in New York, they just kept hammering away. And what we're going to do is we're going to get into what these debates were with a very interesting anti-federalist. I mean, next to Mercy Otis Warren and a few others, this guy was really profound. And his name is Melancthon Smith. Where's this guy get this name, Melancthon Smith? Well, you know, it was interesting when I started doing some research on him. Again, he was one of these guys I've read. But it was like, you know, who is this guy? Well, it turns out this guy was named after none other than one of the primary reformers, Philip Melanchthon. He was one of the leaders in the Reformation, and that just blew me away. I mean, just going then doing some research on Philip Melanchthon, and he was like this super dude right next to Luther, which was extremely impressive. I mean, Luther was like the front guy. This guy was the brains behind the movement, especially in the determination of Lutheranism. Not like anything you see today in a lot of the churches that have gone on the liberal side. But what it was is this guy was a primary theologian of the time for the Lutherans during that Reformation, coming out. Can I say that? Use that in the right format? Well, they did. But we're going to get into more of that as we come back right here. Samuel Adams returning and the anti-federalist absolutely getting it right here on Liberty Works Radio, where liberty works for you. Come on back for the next segment. We're looking forward to it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns, the Anti-Federalist. Yes, he did. They absolutely got it right here on Liberty Works Radio Network, where liberty works for you. Now, one of the things I didn't explain from the first segment is for those of you who are watching on video, and I'm going to have to put up the, you know, the notes on it in YouTube, is that, yes, there's three, let me do that again, one, two, three segments to the program, and on Liberty Works Radio Network, and the producers put all this together. It is fabulous in what they do, and what Dick does in taking and, you know, melding all the different commercials around what the program is. Sometimes I think he tells me, nah, that's all automated, you know, Tom, it's all just, you know, picked up on automation, it just fills in. I think about it and I go, Dick, you know what? You put this together in such a phenomenal way, and the way that those advertisements come in on the programming, it's like, nah, dude, you're a real producer and you plan this thing out. So, Dick, thanks a lot for the way that you produce it. For you folks that are watching on YouTube, you have to go check out Liberty Works Radio Network. I mean, they have been for years doing a phenomenal work. What they're doing is not just you know, from a national market perspective. It's internet radio that also touches into other market opportunities. But you know something, they're a real minister. They're talking about what's important and what the founders understood. The framework of liberty is sourced from an understanding of the First Great Awakening, as I left off, the Reformation, left off in the first segment, and how that applies in self-governance. How do we, what our founders expected is, yeah, you, governing yourself, and then being able to come into society. And how does that work? Well, if you don't understand the biblical principles, the truths of all of that from the First Great Awakening, then you can't understand the Constitution. You can understand all the theoretical stuff and apply all the humanistic stuff, I call it stuff, to it. But until you understand what the First Great Awakening and how that brought into self-governance first, and then into general governance, well, you know, that's it. But Liberty Works Radio Network, there I go, off topic again a little bit. I do that, you know, you take and you start putting me down some rabbit hole, and I usually miss the first tunnel out. So the Liberty Works Radio Network, ladies and gentlemen, that is you. It is all about you and the fact that it is, yes, a listener-funded program, a listener-funded radio program, station, network, ministry. You know, I'm sure hoping that some of you folks go check out the other hosts and hostesses, live programming that's during the week where someone's there. Really, you can pick up the phone and talk to them. I don't have that opportunity from my studio here. Although I have done one live interview, and we're going to be looking at doing some more of that because I think it's really important. And figuring out that technology that, you know, how do you put that other person in the split screen? You know, it'd be interesting to figure that on the video, especially so I don't have the person backwards like I do when I hold up a book or put up a sign. That would be kind of embarrassing to have your guest, you know, do you really get the back of their head or is their right ear on their left ear? I don't know. But anyway, I'd really appreciate you contributing again to Liberty Works Radio Network. I think it's a great network, and I sure appreciate everything they've been doing for Samuel Adams returning those anti-federalists. They got it absolutely correct. Especially when you take and you look at, once again, if we dig into who Melanchthon Smith is and some of the things that he argued during the New York Convention, ladies and gentlemen, you know something? We're experiencing it today. People sit there, scratch their heads, and they're going, you know, I just don't get how Congress does this. I don't understand how the bureaucracy is the way the bureaucracy is. Why do we have all of these people in there? Blah, blah, blah. And then what they do is they moan and complain. Well, I have to tell you, it's because the Anti-Federalists got it right. And Langton Smith being one of the ones that nails it. I mean, he just flat nails it during that New York convention. So let's go back here a little bit on who this character is. His background, he was from New York, he got in there, he was born in Long Island, he was homeschooled. Get this, homeschooled, okay? Then his parents moved to Poughkeepsie. He became involved in the mercantile business, okay? Mercantile business, pretty important stuff. He helped organize the Hollow Presbyterian Church in 1769. Okay, so he was a fundamental believer in his Christianity because Presbyterianism at that time, well, I don't want to get into all of that. Maybe I'll do another program specific to some of that. He was the delegate to the first New York Provincial Congress in 75. He served the Continental Line Regiment in 75. He organized, let's see, the group called the Dutchess County Rangers. In 77, he became one of the three members of Dutchess County, New York Commission for inquiring into, get this, inquiring into, and I'm quoting from the quote, detecting and defeating all conspiracies against the liberties of America. Were there conspiracies back then? Oh my goodness, we'd have these communist educators and these left-wing media nutcases, the fake news, who have no idea, and I continue to tell you this, they have no idea of the founding nor the foundational intent for America. So what do? They run around, do all their other nonsense, and report on all this other garbage, and don't look at what it is about real conspiracy. And, it's kind of outlined a little bit in the Constitution, and you have to read all this other stuff that I take and read and hope I can bring to you from a founder's perspective. Anyway, he served for 6 months administering oaths of allegiance, arresting suspects, informing upon and examining loyalists. Holy schmoly, you mean it's supposed to be loyal to America? And when we look at immigration, we should have, yeah, that is my right hand. You should take an oath of allegiance? That's exactly what it is. All of us Americans that are born into this country forget that those that are true naturalized citizens have to take an oath of allegiance. I've covered that in other programs. So it's something you have to look at as well. But he did that and he found out. And these loyalists, those are the ones that were loyal back to the crown. So this was back in 77, he was doing that. What has happened? We still had a little bit of a war going on in England. This is kind of determined who were the loyalists slash jihadists of the day. Yeah, because they really were. They were against our liberties. Oh, yeah, I know. People want to say that, we Americans, those colonists, the Sam Adams and all of them, Langton Smith, they were the traitors. They were the ones going against, everything. And, I'm sorry, but, anyway. So anyway, he became one of the most important anti-federalists during the state ratification convention in Poughkeepsie in 1788. He made many of the arguments as the federal farmer, which I talked about on other programs, and there's a lot there. And following the, I mentioned this earlier, following the ratification by New Hampshire and Virginia, it came to, okay, we got to be in or not in, what are we going to do? And ultimately, the decision for New York was it was more advantageous to be a part of the Union than not. And in respect to that, then they still had the convention, and they still argued, and they still drove to the whole idea of what it would be to bring in some amendments, because the first aspect and the first understanding of the arguments within Constitution and the Constitution that came out in 87 was that, what about the liberties of the people? I'm going through this here. We can look at what Richard Henry Lee argued and Brutus, and you got to remember Robert Yates was Brutus. Robert Yates was one of the guys from New York that walked out of the convention. You know, when they argue against Hamilton, because Hamilton, if you look at it, listen to some of the other programs, Hamilton wanted a consolidated government. Ladies and gentlemen, believe it or not, Hamilton wanted what you have today. Now, he didn't think that was going to happen, and we're going to talk about that, and we probably won't get to it till maybe the next segment, but I'm giving you this background on this guy. I mean, so what they really got into and what they were talking about is that does the Constitution, as it came out in 87, actually form a system by which your individual liberties are truly protected according to the true ideas of liberty? You see, what we have in all this toleration stuff and all of these other acts of Congress aren't true liberty, ladies and gentlemen. It's false, because these false rights that are coming from either the court or Congress don't fit within the foundational documents, first off, of the Declaration of Independence. Our rights come from God. And so it's only within that framework, and these are the arguments within the frameworks of constitutionalism, that even John Locke said, that if a law, John Locke says this, and I'm going to paraphrase it, John Locke says that if a law, no matter how just it may look to mankind, if it is outside or contrary to the laws of God, it's not a good law. It doesn't make any sense. It's not something that is within the framework of good governance for society. Well, anyway, we're scrolling along here and going through a lot of the different things, and I'm going to introduce you a little bit more into this debate in New York. Some of the interesting aspects of the debate were that it was really old Hamilton that was taken and hammered away. You see, Hamilton's signature, as I tell you often, is on the Constitution, not because it was authorized to be there by the state of New York, because remember, they pulled out of the convention. No, it was out of kindness that George Washington, for all of the arguments that Hamilton made during the convention, that they allowed Hamilton to sign the Constitution. So his signature is more out of, geez, nice you were here, nice contributions, but you know what, your delegation pulled out because they were against this. So and you get into some of these arguments, and you know what, hey, you know what, media, you guys are a bunch of wimps, because when you get into what is written by the Anti-Federalists and Melancton Smith in particular, I'm telling you, he's turning around at Hamilton, and he's going, hey, you know what, you just attacked me. You just, nailed. I mean, his words, I'm scrolling down here a little bit, trying to get to his exact words on what Hamilton was hammering away on. But, they go through these observations, you go back through these debates back and forth, and, they try and they're challenging one another's reasoning, and it gets dicey, man. I'm telling you, when you really read these debates, there were real attacks, and attacks on, on personality and stuff like that. Anyway, we're getting close to the end of this segment, but, one of the things that we have to look at is that Melancton Smith absolutely predicted what we would have in overblown bureaucracy. That's what I really want to focus on, especially as we get in and close out the next segment, is that he looked at everything that was going on and how the Constitution would form, and that we would see the buy-offs and the positioning of the bureaucracy, as well as Congress becoming millionaires. Really? They talked about that then? And we're going to talk about it in the next segment. So come on back. And Samuel Adams returns, the Anti-Federalist. Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. The Anti-Federalist got it absolutely correct. You know, we've just been kind of having fun with this, and I'm delighted to be here with you. Yeah, this is Tom Novolis, your host. I know there's a lot of times I forget to introduce myself, but that's who I am. And we're here with the National Center for the Development of Constitutional Strategies, as well as I always tell you, what we launched here over the last few months on CPAC is the Samuel Adams Center for Political Science. We're going to talk about that a little bit here from Malakin Smith and his comments as to what we should know as a people to keep ourselves correct. SACPS.org sure needs your help. You know what? We're looking to expand this nationally. Need some money. Yep, we got to have that to help these young people. So this is for high school through grad school. Go on to sacps.org on the About tab and check out the little introductory video there. It tells you about it, why, so on and so forth. I think it's important that you work with some young folks, and that's what we're committed to doing. And you know what, Gen Zers, and even into the millennials, you know what? Let's have a conversation. I'd surely like to have a conversation. And, I surely was a good friend of my wife's. You know, what the heck? But anyway, if we could talk about what is people are policy, and that means you. You being, you know, are you a people? If you're a people, then you make policy all the time, every day, whether you realize it or not. And what does that mean for school, work, family, and, even governance? So anyway, back on to Malakin Smith and what he's all about. And, yeah, you can find the audio archives of the program at where? Yeah, that's it, SamuelAdamsReturns.net. So that's where the archives are of the program. Try and work in off of YouTube, figure out how to put those links there on the website as well. You know, let's do it. Anyway, I got the book out. I have stuff up on the screen. But it was real interesting. One of the things that they were arguing about, and this was on the 25th of June, 1788, and they were talking about the Senate and the senators, and Smith was arguing that this was going to be an oligarchy, no different than Brutus did, no different than the federal farmer did, that the Senate would become an oligarchy. And that was before the 17th Amendment. Go figure that. You know, and as we talk about, and you can do research and so on. Anyway, 17th Amendment really destroyed federalism, okay? Really has destroyed federalism, because the senators, who in the world do they represent? They don't represent anybody but themselves. We're seeing that in this whole healthcare debacle and everything else. And that's what got us into a lot of the treaty issues that I talked about a couple of weeks ago on Article 6, and why we have a corrupted form of federal government, because the Senate doesn't really, they're not accountable to anybody as they were expected to be under the Constitution, right? They were supposed to be responsible to the state legislators, which were the elected representatives of you. So that way, yeah, anyhow. So he talks about this whole idea in that, and he's going through this process, and he's talking about these offices and the ambitions of gaining the qualifications necessary to govern will be in some proportion to the chance of success. Sounds like the elections today. How's that proportional? Anyway, if the office is to be perpetually confined to a few, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, so on and so forth, other men of equal talents and virtue, but not possessed of so extensive an influence, may be discouraged from aspiring to it. It's kind of tough finding the right people, right? The Kid Rock thing really rocks. I'm pretty excited about Kid Rock, you know, announcing for the Senate and Sheriff Clark. Come on, those are real people that get it. All right, now, The more perfectly we are versed in the political science, the more firmly will the happy principles of republicanism be supported. Whoa, that's a challenge right there. We don't teach that in schools anymore. Well, that's why we have SACPS.org, is because we're augmenting what's not taught in schools, not even taught in homeschool, okay? You got to get that too, because I've talked to a number of homeschoolers. Pretty cool that, you know, they're interested in what SACPS, they're going, yeah, we learned a bunch of stuff, but you know what? We don't know how to implement it. Well, anyway, he goes on to talking about, they're placing an amendment into place. They're talking about all of this stuff with government. He talks about his apprehension is that the power of recall would not be exercised as often as it ought to be. Remember, the Senate was to be recalled. A senator could be recalled by the state legislature if they were not doing what the state legislature sent them to do. How do you recall a senator today? You know, they tried that in Arizona. You know, they tried to take and even get someone else other than John McCain elected. And what? It just flat didn't work, doesn't work. So, once again, you have these senators who are accountable to no one other than their oligarchy, so on and so forth. All right, let's get into some of the interesting things that I was talking about. Anyway, he got into this whole aspect of, hey, where's the money come from? How does that work? Who's arguing this whole piece? You know, he talks about the influence. This really rocked for me. I'll tell you what, he gets into this argument talking about gentlemen have ridiculed his apprehension. Remember, media, you know what? You know, yeah, okay, mainstream media is doing their ridiculing, but you know what? When we ridicule them for being stupid, for not knowing constitutional intent and truth, you know, suck it up, you pansies. It's about time you take and you learn something. I mean, you know, your minds are as clear as the dark of night. Anyhow, this goes on to say, he says, how do you say that? You know, are people to be corrupted by their own money? Wait a minute. The Tocqueville talks about that in 1850-ish when he writes. But here it is. You have this guy saying people are corrupted by what? By their own money. He goes on to say, sure, in many countries, the people pay money to corrupt themselves. Why should it not happen in this country? Certainly, the Congress will be as liable to corruption as other bodies of men. Have they not the same frailties and the same temptations? With respect to the corruption arising from the disposal of offices, the gentlemen have treated the argument with insignificance. But isn't that what Congress does today, too? Hey, you know, big deal about who gets into office, who's the bureaucrat, who gets appointed. Except when it comes to the Trump administration, because they're trying to do the right thing, so they don't want those folks in there, because they're going to attack everything that he's talking about here. But let anyone make a calculation and see whether there will not be good offices enough to dispose of to every man who goes there, who will then freely resign his seat. For can anyone suppose that the member of Congress would not go out and relinquish his $4 a day? That's how they got it, that $4 a day, you know, get that. They're saying they're going to relinquish their $4 a day for £2,000 or £3,000 a year. Now, let's see. How is it that a congressperson becomes a millionaire when they never had a real job? Blanket Smith is talking about that. You get that? You know, so, oh, and that was the other thing. You know, what was interesting is that when I was reading about that today, was that David Clark refused to go into the Trump administration because a lot of the pundits were saying, well, all he wants to do that is a stepping stone to the Senate, because it happened in a lot of other administrations. A lot of these people get into some, you know, bureaucratic job for a period of time, and next thing you know, they're running for Senate. That's how Warren, what is she? I can't tell if she's an American Indian or what. But anyway, that's how Senator Warren got in, is that she actually was appointed by Obama into some bureaucratic position, and then she ran for Senate. And, that's happened with the Clinton administration. Look, it's happened with the Bush administration. It's happened before. So I think that according to a anti-federalist position, you know what, Sheriff Clark has used some of the greatest wisdom in understanding political systems and methodology that, you know what, I haven't read about since reading the anti-federalist, so this is, what you get. And because congressmen would be willing to go into bureaucratic offices and set up the positions. Okay, so going down that rabbit hole, they said, let's see, he goes, it is here objected that no man can hold an office created during his time in Congress. But it will be easy for a man of influence who has his eye a favored office previously created and already filled to say to his friend who holds that office, here, I will procure you another place of more emolument, which means more importance, right? Provided you will relinquish yours in favor of me. The Constitution appears to be a restraint, when in fact it is none of that at all. I will presume, sir, there is not a government in the world in which there is greater scope for influence and corruption in the disposal of offices. Sir, I will not declaim and say all men are dishonest, but I think that in forming a constitution, if we presume this, we shall be on the safest side. Extreme is certainly less dangerous than the other. And he goes on to finish off with this whole idea that don't know where it's going to go, especially with the intentions of the bureaucracies. So, what we saw over the many, many years of the Constitution was what? Congress starts developing all these different departments that were not originally intended in the Constitution. Well, why is that, do you think? Let's start thinking through what Melanchthon Smith just said about how do you take and you add the extra personal ducats to your bucket. How does that happen? Well, it happens, from exactly what he said. There's corruption that is going on out there. And to the effect of what? An expanding government, expanding bureaucracy. It's quite interesting to me and relatively, I go back through. That's why I always say the anti-federalists got it right. They saw this coming under the idea of the Constitution. And exercising that. He goes on to say he's frequently observed a restraint upon the state government which Congress never can be under. Get that? So here we can restrain the states. And that was even under the Articles of Confederation, there were restraints. So guess what? Under the Constitution and its framework. So it is a truth capable of demonstration that the nearer the representative is to the constituent, the more attached and dependent he will be. That's a whole nother thing. I've talked about this before, is that these guys live in Congress and in Washington, D.C. way too long. So, as we take a look at how bureaucratic creep came along, Melanchthon Smith taking and speaking of that, what is it that people are policy? Ladies and gentlemen, get involved. Learn what it is from policymaking. Learn what it is about when it comes to Republicanism, not the Republican Party, but Republicanism, and help the young people to understand that with Samuel Adams, Center for Political Science, SACPS.org. So we're going to come back next week, and we've run out of time. It always happens that way, and thanks for going down the rabbit holes with me and the mirrors of history. Here, that's Samuel Adams. Yes, he does. He returns. And those anti-federalists, they absolutely got it right. Here on Liberty Works Radio Network.